Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Welcome to the Backstory Podcast. I'm your host, Colby Kolb. And on this episode, when it comes to legacy, there's only a few people in the music business that have a real serious legacy. And this brother right here has got over 50 years, 60 years of legacy in the music business and still relevant today. I am talking about the most amazing Mr. Ron Isley. How are you, sir?
Fantastic.
It's really good to see you. Really good to talk to you. I feel like my entire life, like there has been, and I'm 50 plus years old. So my entire life, I have a Ron Isley musical connection somewhere along the line. And it's just so phenomenal right in this moment that you put out an album named after a single on an album in 1975 or an album cut basically. And now you have a number one record remaking that record in 2022. You know how like insane that sounds?
I love that record so much, you know. It's one of my favorites, you know. So that's one of the records I wanted to do with her.
Well, I mean, first of all, then it's Beyonce, right? So she's the one of the biggest artists in the game who, is a fan of yours and wants you to be on a record with you and her together. I mean, that must be super cool, man. So let's go back a little bit because you are from the Cincinnati, Ohio area. And talk a little bit about you and your brothers and just getting into music. So you were the third of six brothers?
Yeah. Well, my mother, she taught music. And they always wanted to have a quartet. So they started me off singing at 2 years old. Wow. I was singing gospel songs, and we had a gospel group. And we had that all the way up until a certain time. And my father, he was a singer, too.
Okay.
And he always wanted a group that could sing everything, pop, R&B, country and western, gospel music. He said, I want you all to learn it all. So they taught all of the different genres of music to us. And we left Cincinnati when I was about 15 years old, going to New York to audition for Atlantic Records. You know, that was when Frankie Lyman was out.
Okay.
Why do birds sing so okay? And yeah. I couldn't wait to get to New York and have out a record so all of my friends back in Cincinnati could hear.
Right.
So we had a couple of records out, but it took us a couple of years before we had the final record, Shout. I wrote the record Shout in Philadelphia, and it took off. And after that, it was like we was ready to get down with everything, you know.
And also a lot of non-African-American artists did the song as well at the time, right?
Oh, yeah. The Beatles did Twist and Shout. That was our second biggest hit.
Yeah.
And we went over in England, and we came back and went to Motown and did This Old Heart of Mine and wanted to have our own thing like Berry Gordy, and we decided because we lived in Teaneck, New Jersey, Teaneck Records.
Yeah.
We named our record company after the town we lived in, and our first hit record was It's Your Thing. And
that was massive.
Oh, it did 5 million records, you know.
Wow.
And we was off and running then for real.
So you said the Beatles redid your record. So were you fairly compensated when these artists redid your songs?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. You know, they were imitating us over there in England. Mm-hmm. They were doing Shout and Twist and Shout. And they were doing the, ooh, you know, trying to be like us, you know.
Yeah.
And from there on, they came to New York and played Ed Sullivan Show. And they did Twist and Shout was their first record for them. Not their first record, but one of the first records. And from that time on, they just became the Beatles, the real Beatles. They wanted to stay at our house, and we were tight with the Rolling Stones and everybody and everyone when we went to England. And we're still friends. And they said, if it don't be for us, they would have never made it.
Wow.
Yeah, that's with Paul McCartney, and they have certain write-ups that will tell you that.
And that was, if you want to talk about a viral global success, the Beatles in the 60s were like, I mean, that's a one of a kind opportunity, and you influenced them. That must feel amazing.
Yeah, it is. It really is. You know, Jimi Hendrix lived at a house. He made his first record with us, Testify. When we went to England, our keyboard player that we chose was Elton John.
Wow.
So, you know.
That's amazing. So you say you start T-Neck Records and you start your journey in the 60s here in America on the R&B side. And then you hit a home run your first time out. What was that like? You know, that first song comes out and all of a sudden you're like a household name across America.
Oh, well, that was a 1959 Shout. And, today, this is one of the records they play at everybody's wedding. Mm-hmm. Buffalo score a touchdown, they play yeah. Shout. Yeah. You know, Shout is everybody in the world knows that song, you know.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You make me want to shout.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's just amazing. I mean, it goes beyond, you know, the moment you made it. And that, you know, to make a record that's able to last the test of time like that, and then so many generations know it. I bet you probably walk around sometimes and you'll hear a song that you wrote or a song that you influenced. And do you ever just take a step back and it blows your mind?
All the time. You know, it just... You walk up, somebody's getting married, and you hear a band in there playing, and maybe somebody singing Shout in a movie or something like that. It's Your Thing is another song.
Yeah.
Twist and Shout is, we've had those kind of songs. In Between the Sheets, we've been sampled by over 1,000 rappers, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so... It's a wonderful feeling, and God blessed us to live this long. Now, my eldest brother has passed away, and my younger brother passed away. But, you know, I'm still doing this music, and I was doing it ever since I was 2 years old, you know?
That's all you know.
I love it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I know it's a gift from God, and that's why I want to do it.
So in 1969, you have It's Your Thing, again, a massive record for you all. And then you go on this run, like, and this is kind of where, like, I remember from my childhood, because I remember your music was just so impactful. It was sort of like the one thing about the Isley Brothers music is sort of the DNA of Black America. Like, there's not many people in Black America that don't have a connection to your music or don't remember all of your amazing performances on Soul Train, because that's where we used to see all of our artists. So you start with It's Your Thing. Then you got I Turned You On. Let's talk a little bit about some of these songs, because you really just started to go on a roll, and it felt like you guys didn't really rest from like 69 to 80. Was that kind of accurate? You just rolled for like them 11 years?
Yeah, man. Who's That Lady?
Oh, man.
Fight the Power. You know, Living for the Love of You. Hello, It's Me. Summer Breeze. You know.
Wow.
All the way up to the R. Kelly years.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Contagious. And, you know, I had five albums during that time that were double platinum albums, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a blessing, man, that you can sing something that everybody is become very familiar with and they love, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk about Work to Do, because that was another big record that I remember the song as a child, but then I remember Vanessa Williams redid the record at some point. But talk about that song. Where did that come from, Work to Do? What was that about?
I wrote Work to Do. And, mm-hmm. You know, somebody, I think it was Joe Robinson, said, man, I got work to do. Mm-hmm. So I said, I'm going to write a song.
Yeah.
You know, I'm taking care of business. Can't you see? I'm trying to make it for you. I want to make it for me. You know, sometimes it makes me feel I'm neglecting you, but I love to spend more time, but I got so many things to do. I got work to do.
Wow. That's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah,
Thomas, another Thomas song.
Yeah. Well,
let's talk about That Lady. Who was That Lady about?
I forget. I wrote that, and we recorded it twice. I wrote that. I wrote that song, and we recorded it. It did kind of well, but we wanted to do it again. And my brothers just got into guitar playing, and he wrote a couple of the verses too for the new "Who's That Lady," and we recorded that when we added the brothers to the album. And that was our first single, and that was like a number one record.
Yeah.
McDonald's is not new to chicken. So maybe stop questioning their chicken cred and get your hands on the McCrispy. Juicy fried chicken, buttery bun, unmatched pickle to chicken ratio. Yeah, they know what they're doing. In fact, we can honestly say they're not new to chicken. They're true to chicken. The McCrispy. Only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
What about Summer Breeze? Tell me about the making of that record, which is another timeless record.
That record was done by, I think, Sills and Cross. And I said, I want to do that record. And I had an idea of how the record, the way we wanted to do it, you know.
Right.
And we rehearsed it for a week, and we were in I believe California, and it was wintertime when the "Who's That Lady" came out.
Right.
And that was supposed to be our second record, but it was so cold. Say, man, we ain't gonna be talking about a summer breeze and it's freezing out here.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But the record exploded, you know.
Yeah. And then so America in the 70s, you know, we had a lot going on in the country, and you come with the Fight the Power album and song, and talk a little bit about that moment for you. Because I remember as a kid, the afros on the album cover, and it was like my parents were civil rights activists. So like every protest, like they would put that song on, like everywhere we would go, like it would be Fight the Power. And then obviously Public Enemy does their own version of Fight the Power many years later. But talk a little bit about, because you had not really made records like that before until that moment. What was that about?
Well, my brother Ernie, Ernest Isley, he's the guitar player. Mm-hmm. He wrote the song, you know, and in the studio, the words to the song was just a couple of words were changed. And tried to play my music. You know, they say my music's too loud and all this nonsense going down. And I say, when I was singing it, I said all this bullshit going down.
Right,
you know,
right,
made the song explode. And I said, you know, we need to say what the real feeling is, you know. And if it's accepted, it's one thing. If it's not, it's, you know. But that's what I felt it should have, and that's what you know, and that opened up another world for us.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, it was definitely for that moment. It was very timely. So then another song, which again is, I would say, a timeless anthem, is "For the Love of You." Talk a little bit about that song, because it's such a beautiful song and such a connection that you have when you hear it. Like, it really stops you in your tracks and makes you reflect. And it's just the way you sung that song, it was just so beautiful.
We did three slow songs on that album and three fast songs. Fight the Power. The name of the album was "The Heat Is On."
Yep.
And that album went number one and did about 3 or 4 million. I got a chance to really get into my slow singing. Because after singing records like "Twist and Shout" and "This Heart of Mine" and "Shout," you know, it took a long time for me, you know, to switch over to what I really wanted to do, you know. And that song was like, it was amazing. That's the same album that we did, "Make Me Say It Again, Girl." And we never got a chance to release that because the record company said, don't release no more singles. Just let them keep buying the album. Keep buying.
Wow.
The album. And still today, that song, "For the Love of You," and "Make Me Say It Again," which you know, you guys made it number one for five weeks. And "Sensuality" was other slow song.
Oh, yeah. That was a really good song, man.
Yeah.
A different type of sound at the time, too. Like, it was a record that when you played it on the radio, it really stood out. Like, you guys were always there was no, in a business that is full of like copycats, people always copycat a sound. You guys was always unique with your music, but also you were just trailblazing. Like you just were constantly trailblazing with singles. And it took you almost 50 years later, but you did release it as a single and it's number one now for 5 weeks. So mission accomplished. But yeah, For the Love of You is just a great, great song. Let's talk about Harvest for the World. So talk a little bit about that song.
My brother, Ernest Isley, he wrote that, you know, we thought that song was so great, you know, talking about what was going on and when will there be a harvest for the world. And there's still, you know, we look at everything that's going on right now and think about that song and say, hey, we still have to say, when will that, you know, when will the world, you know, stop the fighting and this and that and this, and you know, just have a harvest, you know. But that's the kind of songs he would write. He wrote Harvest for the World. He wrote Make Me Say It Again, Girl. And he wrote At Your Best, Your Love.
Oh, beautiful.
In
beautiful.
Between the Sheets.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, on and on.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So one of my all-time favorite Isley Brothers songs, and a song that almost will bring a tear to my eye when I hear it, because it makes me happy, but kind of makes me sad a little bit, is Voyage to Atlantis. Talk a little bit about that record, wow. Bro.
He wrote that song too.
Bruh. That record?
Yeah. And he wrote,
who broke up with this man? Like, tell me about this woman, please.
He wrote that song, man. And I felt that same way when I heard it.
Yeah.
Wow, man. I stepped back and said, I got to do this song, you know. And then he called it Atlantis. And he said, well, you're talking about another town, another time, and somebody would come back, and he would always love this person. That's what we have in this song called A Voyage. You know, this new song that we have.
Yeah. I mean, it's just the music is beautiful, just the way you sing it, and it's just that comeback. Like, that's just... Wow. Like, and again, I was a kid when this was out, and it's like, I vividly remember it, and it really touches me, and it's just such a beautiful song, and it's not that many songs that make me feel that way, but that particular song, like, whenever I hear it, I will stop and listen to it like it's the first time, and it actually makes me feel like I feel the emotion of it, and that song is, I mean, if I could ever say one thing to you in my life, I just did, just tell you about how special that song is to me. But let's move on, because then you do Groove With You in 1978. Talk a little bit about that record.
I went to the studio. My younger brother wrote all the words to that. Groove With You, it had a special sound to it. And at the time, I think Chaka Khan had a couple of records that had a kind of groovy sound. We used to listen to everybody's record, you know, before, you know, going to record, because it's one, it felt like we were in a contest. And it feels that way right now. You know, like we were very competitive. You know, whatever Marvin Gaye would do, you know, we say, hey, man, he did Sexual Healing. We wrote In Between the Sheets.
Yeah, yeah. You know? We're going to get to that one.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. You know, and Groove With You was a special song to us. And we did, I'm trying to say the other song that we did. I'll think of it in a minute.
Okay. Yeah. So Groove With You, man, is like, man, that was a massive record. And then we get into the 80s. So talk about what it was like to be an artist in the like 60s and then transition into like the sounds of music in the 70s. And then what were you feeling when you went from 70s to 80s? So like that was another musical transition. Things were changing. What was that like for you? What were y'all thinking in that moment?
All right. The song I was just trying to think of a few minutes ago was Don't Say Goodnight.
Oh, Don't Say Goodnight. Yeah, that was 79. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, 79. Yeah. And that was when Teddy Pendergrass and the group he was with was singing songs like that. And he had the song Close the Door and Turn Off the Lights.
Yep.
You know, that type of thing. So we came up with the song Don't Say Goodnight.
Don't Say Goodnight, yeah. And actually, years later, the first time I ever talked on a radio in radio when I was an intern, I had they had me jump on and do this dedication, and it was the tail end of that song. So
in my
illustrious career, the first time I ever said anything on the radio, it was on the back end of Don't Say Goodnight. So I have that career connection with you. So anyway, you transition to the 80s. Music is like definitely changing, but you guys are just kind of like still doing your thing. And then you come with Between the Sheets, which is such a massive, timeless record. And it came, you know, a year and some change after Sexual Healing. So talk a little bit about making that record.
And that song, man, In Between the Sheets was like, oh, man. Everybody went crazy over that.
Yeah.
But that was at the time Michael Jackson recorded the Thriller.
Yep. Yep.
And so, you know, everybody, we were all turning our heads over there. We're on the same company, distributed by the same company. And so he was doing a million records a week, you know. And so when that record made number one, we were still looking at the Thriller.
Yeah, that was a hell of a run he had for that album, man. Like six singles, all massive.
We're still dancing off of Billie Jean.
Yeah. No, that was wow. Yeah, he had like, it was like 83. It was like the tail end of 83,
83.
Through almost 85 that album was dominant. Yeah.
It still is.
it still is. And so then you come back Between the Sheets with Choosy Lover, which is again another timeless, timeless record. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I wrote that. That was the second single on our album, and our album did. I think our album did close to 3.5 million, close to 4 million, but everybody was talking about the Thriller. You know, you mentioned your album doing 2 million at the time. You know, that was all right. But hey, man, have you heard the Thriller? You know,
yeah, 44 million.
Yeah, we couldn't get away. You couldn't take that out of your mind. You know, because we're saying how you know what 44 million. You know, how do you do that? You know.
Yeah. Wow. It was definitely an anomaly. And if you think about it, there were so many great artists, black artists during that time that were actually forced to stay in the black universe because he had absorbed so much space in R&B, pop, everywhere else. And so we had if you think about that 82 to like 86, them 4 years, there was a lot of good R&B that came out in at that time. It was a lot of good music. But again, Thriller outshined everybody.
Yeah. And a lot of groups broke up because of that.
Yeah.
Earth, Wind and Fire, everybody, you know, this just gave in.
Yeah.
McDonald's is not new to chicken. So maybe stop questioning their chicken cred and get your hands on the McCrispy. Juicy fried chicken, buttery bun, unmatched pickle to chicken ratio. Yeah, they know what they're doing. In fact, we can honestly say they're not new to chicken. They're true to chicken. The McCrispy. Only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
So let's fast forward into the 90s. So you kind of venture into more of a solo artist and you kind of reinvent yourself as Mr. Big. And
my eldest brother died.
Yeah.
And then my next brother, he decided he wanted to, his wife became a minister.
Okay.
And he wanted to do ministry with his wife. And I went to California and met Angela Winbush.
Yeah.
And she wrote the song for me, Smooth Selling.
Yeah.
And which was a big hit. Then we did maybe two or three albums. I did the next album was Spend the Night. Spend the Night with Me.
Yeah.
That was number one song too. And then I met R. Kelly. His mother was a big fan of ours. And then he knew so much of our music. I noticed in a couple of his songs, he would do little bits and pieces of our record.
Yeah.
And so he said, I got this special record I want you to hear. I think I want you to do it with me. And he played for me, Keep It On The Down Low.
Yep. Yep.
And that's how everything started.
Yeah. And you guys, the video you did was, I remember the movie, the original movie of, because I remember seeing it. What was that movie called? It wasn't called Vengeance. It was called
Revenge.
Revenge. I knew it, it had a V in it somewhere. So yeah, Revenge. I remember that movie, and you guys kind of reenacted that, and you became the persona Mr. Biggs.
Yeah.
What was that like for you? Because, you know, you had then been 40 years almost in the business, 30, 40 years in the business, and then here you come reinventing yourself in another time as music has changed. And so you embraced it and ran with it. So was there any apprehension, or you just said, man, I'm a roll with this?
Well, in the song Download, the character that I played in the video was Mr. Biggs.
Yep.
And after that, the whole thing just changed. My name changed.
Yeah.
I'm walking down the street. Hey, Mr. Biggs, that's Mr. Biggs. And I'm still Mr. Biggs.
Yep.
And just from that video alone, you know, then I did Contagious.
Contagious. Yeah.
Then I did Kelly Price.
Yeah.
You know, was the artist at the time. Yeah. With me, and she just a friend of mine.
Friend of mine, yeah.
Mr. Biggs and that, you know, and wow, you know.
Yeah. There's got to be a documentary or a movie about you and your brothers and your journey in this business. Please tell me you guys are working on something.
We're working on it now, right now.
Okay.
We're working on it right now.
Is it going to be documentary or like a straight movie? Yeah.
Well, we're doing the documentary and we're going to do the movie.
Okay, good, you know, good.
I don't know who's going to play the part in the movie.
Yeah, you got to start thinking about who's going to play you, bro.
Yeah.
Like, who is that person? Who's going to do you? Who's able to do you?
That's tough. We'll find someone.
Yeah. No, I'm so looking forward to that, because I think that your story is a unique story, and you've touched so many different facets of music. Not just Black music, just music in general, and you inspire so many artists. So there's a lot of stories that we want to know. Like, I really want to know more about the Beatles. I want to know about the Rolling Stones. I want to know about Jimi Hendrix. I want to know about, you know, today, like the projects you have out now where you have collaborated. You the plug, right? So that's it. The plug with my man 2 Chainz.
Yeah.
But, you know, you have all these current day artists. What is it that keeps you so connected to current trends? Because a lot of artists don't do that. There's a period where it just ends. So what is it about you that keeps you connected?
It's, you know, it seems as though I know everybody, or everybody knows me, you know. Mm-hmm. And so we have conversations and stuff about the business. They want to do stuff on the records. And when I met 2 Chainz, we had like, it's just one of them conversations about everything we have done and how he started his career. And, you know, he wanted me to do something on his record, and I was doing the plug at the same time. And he fell in love with the, you know, with that. And he wrote something that, you know, you see in the interview, what he wrote for the plug. I did something in his record.
Yeah.
I will tell you, it's he did a song called Atlanta.
Okay.
And I did something, and you know, like instead of me saying Atlantis, I said Atlanta.
Okay.
You're going to hear that. It's off the chain.
The same way you did Voyage to Atlantis, you did Voyage to Atlanta?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. You know, I'm in. You ain't got to sell me no more, bro.
I think it's going to be his next single.
Yeah. Wow. Well, Mr. Isley, man, I just really appreciate you taking the time to just have a conversation with me. Again, I'm just a big old fan, and you know, I'm going to call my dad when I hang out with you and tell him I just spoke to Ron Isley, and that's going to mean more to him than anything else I've ever accomplished in my in my career, because you are just, you know, standing the test of time. So I want to make sure we all continue to give you your flowers while you are still making all this amazing music, and we just look forward to the documentaries and the movies so we can really teach future generations thousands of years from now about, you know, the Isley brothers and the impact that you all have had to the culture.
That's great. God bless you too, man.
Yeah. Well, thank you, man. Thank you for your time. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Ron Isley, the plug, Mr. Big, the legacy himself, the legend himself. Thank you for joining the Backstory Podcast.
Thank you, and God bless you.
God bless you, brother.
Coming up on the next Backstory Podcast, legendary hip-hop producer and artist Pete Rock.
I was still building my name, but I got paid for that. But you know what I'm saying? Like, that is what set it off. That remix is what set it off. Then I started doing a whole bunch of other remixes. Jump Around, Dos Effects, all this other stuff. And after Shut Them Down, my name started to bubble.
The Backstory Podcast with Colby Kolb is an Urban One Incorporated Reach Media Pod Is Good production, hosted and executive produced by yours truly, Colby Kolb, edited by Donkus. Follow us on Twitter at BackstoryPCC, on Instagram, Get The Backstory. Senior Director of Podcast Operations, Sierra Reed. For Sales and Corporate Partnerships, Josh Romani and Michelle Marino. Digital Marketing, Walter Gaynor, J.R. Smith, and Tim Hall. Thanks again for listening to the Backstory Podcast.